Welcome. If you're a woman who has a sense that there's more out there for you, you're in the right place. I'm Whitney Baker, host of the Electric Ideas podcast. Somewhere along the line of work and kids, life carried on, but I lost track of my truth. I'm on a reflective journey, and that's what this podcast is all about. Each week, I interview a woman who is lighting her own path and offering others hope. Before our conversation ends, we'll share a reflective question for you to explore. Sometimes all we need is a jolt, a fresh idea, an aha moment that connects us to a sense of possibility. This, my friends, is what I call an electric idea. Welcome back to Electric Ideas. I'm your host, Whitney Baker. I'm so excited about our guest today. Today, I'm joined by Christy Nelson. She is former executive director of the global nonprofit organization, Grateful Living. And we are diving into her book called Wake Up Grateful, The Transformative Practice of Taking Nothing for Granted. This is one of those books that really moved me. I wish it was on required reading lists across the land. That's why I am so excited to have Christy here to talk to me, because I know it's going to shift your thinking on what it means to be grateful. Being a longtime stage 4 cancer survivor is part of what has really inspired Christy in her everyday to support others in living and loving with what she calls this great fullness of heart. Christy is an incredible human. I love this conversation. I know you are going to as well. So let's get into it. Christy, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here, Whitney. Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you here. I hung on many sentences in your book, and I'm so glad that we get a chance to unpack at least a little bit of that wisdom today. So I know one big piece of the book is kind of establishing these main 5 principles or touchstones of grateful living. So let's start with the first one. And I actually have a quote that I pulled that I want to start with.
Oh, good.
So the first one is, life is a gift. And you said, grateful living is fundamentally grounded in the invitation to see life as a gift, an unexpected gift that you did not need to do anything to earn or deserve, but is coming to you, wrapped in a wide range of packaging. So tell us more why it's important to look at life through the lens of it being a gift.
It's unpromised. You know, the truth is, it's like this extraordinary experience. I mean, what it does for me is it brings me present. Life is a gift. It's right here, right now. And presence is everything, you know, being able to be present for the experience of life. And I think we come to life with so many expectations and assumptions and entitlement. And I think those things really get in the way of experiencing life as a blessing and life as kind of an unexpected miracle. I really think it's, you know, not in a religious way, but I think it's a miracle to be alive. You know, for me to make it, I'll be 64 this week. For me to make it to 64, it just feels like there are millions of things that could have gone wrong and millions of things that had to go right to keep me alive so that I could be here right now. And that's true for anybody who's hearing this or watching this, right? Is that the truth is that so much has to happen that it's beyond our wildest imaginings. This idea that life is a gift and it comes to us and it will be taken from us and we don't know when. And the whole process, I think, to be in awe of it is to see it as a gift. It helps to see it as a gift, to just be in awe of the whole miraculous nature of being alive. And I love to go through life that way because it makes me feel like I'm really here for the whole experience of it, as opposed to having the expectation that, oh, well, I've got plenty of time and I can make good on those things then. I can forgive people in the future. I'll be grateful when everything lines up and is perfect. That whole idea of taking life for granted is, it flies in the face of seeing life as a gift. So it really helps me to see it that way. And I think it helps a lot of other people as well.
Yeah, that's a major perspective shift. And actually, that kind of takes us right into the second touchstone of everything as a surprise, because I think it's so easy, especially during different phases of our lives, to get stuck in the ho-hum or just being focused on putting out fires that we're not really living. You know, it feels like we're just responding and reacting. We've lost our inspiration sometimes. What can you tell us about looking at life kind of through this lens of curiosity, like everything is a surprise, the second touchstone.
It's such a great way to go through life because it keeps us, as you say, curious. Curiosity allows us to learn anything, you know? And so when we see everything as if it's promised and as if we can expect what's going to unfold, right? So you say ho-hum, I think it's also going through the motions of life and we don't learn much of anything. I think it doesn't encourage growth. I think a lot of people have a hard time with this concept of everything being a surprise, being mystery or mysterious, because it's scary in some ways, because anything could happen. And I always like to remind people that it's been your openness for surprise that has also allowed the most extraordinary and beautiful and unexpected, wonderful things to happen in your life. And if you just go with your blinders on and you go through the motions of your life as if you have it all figured out, or you should, you're going to miss so many things that are just around the periphery of your vision or that are waiting to surprise you. And even where you are waiting to surprise yourself, you know, getting out of your own box and letting the people in your life who you know really well, let them surprise you. You know, I think we get so attached to our ideas of how things are supposed to be that we don't experience things as they really are, and we don't experience people as they really are.
That's powerful. Two things that are coming up for me as you were talking about this. You mentioned presence and how, you know, life is a gift and everything is a surprise. I think sometimes in the pace of certain people's lives, it's like we can be not dropped into the present because we're already planning for the next five steps ahead. And so for an example, for, you know, a lot of caregivers happen to be in my audience. And I think sometimes moms are like, okay, I'm going to get through dinner. And they'll like use these types of words, like, yes, get through dinner. And then I'm going to get through this. And they're kind of five steps ahead. And when we shift into being like, what could dinner bring? I'm not saying every night, but when we even just have that shift, it might be exciting. Something, maybe something exciting will happen, or maybe it could be great. It really changes the energy.
It changes the energy. And I'll say I'm a big time caregiver, both my elders and I have a stepson who's back home living with us in his late 20s. I mean, the idea that like, I can just get through till they're 18, right? Well, there's a misconception, because once you're a parent forever. And what's going to be needed is you're not going to be able to know that, you know, what's going to really be called for. So one of the things that I think is just came to me as you were speaking is this idea of, what if you asked around the table, what surprised you today? And ask a surprising question. You know, share something surprising, share something that you didn't expect. And what you come to realize is we really treat each other so often as if, like, I really like to say, the person who comes home at the end of the day is not the person who left in the morning. There is no way that you are the same person. And there's no way that anybody who you're connecting with at the end of the day is the same person as the one who left, because life changes us. We have so many thoughts, experiences, insights, hurts, joys that happen to any of us during the course of the day. But I think we tend to treat the people who are closest to us in our lives as if they're just these fixed objects and that there's nothing new to experience about ourselves or them. And I think it's great to just crack that whole thing wide open and start embracing surprise. The surprisingness of ourselves and of the people we're around has so much to offer.
That's really a beautiful reflection, because when I think about people, I think that can be very healing as well, because it's interesting. There's some people, especially if they'll feel like family can be tricky for people, but maybe there's a far-flung relative who you had some random beef with as a teenager, and then you kind of just go into every like interaction with that chip. I like this invitation to almost see if we can challenge ourselves to just like clean slate and like look at them how they are now and assume that people can change, because they have.
They are changing, right? If you're changing, in some people we would say, oh, that person's always the same, you know, and there are truths. There are some people who change more than others. And yet, what if we were curious about how are you different today than you were yesterday? What that's such a wild question to ask. I think questions are really rich and provocative, and partly it's on us to figure out how to ask new questions. If we want new experiences and new insights about people and new ways to kind of crack our own hearts open, we need to be willing to say new things about ourselves, to ask new questions, to be different. And that's a great invitation. It takes a lot of courage, but I think it's a great way to start the ball rolling.
I agree. And I think it's empowering to say, okay, you know, you can tell yourself a story about what your dinner tonight's going to look like with this person, but why don't you empower yourself and choose to ask a surprising question and maybe shift the entire trajectory? I love that.
Yeah. I love that. Are you willing to be surprised? You know, it's really the good question.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on, I know the next touchstone is the ordinary is extraordinary. So you said in the book that the 180 degree opposite of gratefulness is to take life for granted. And I think we've all had those times where we slip into autopilot. I mean, you talk about everything from the tools in your kitchen. And I remember reading this and being like, thank you. You know, I'm cutting onions and I'm doing all these things. And I just definitely for that day, at least had that appreciation. And also the people, and this might not even be the people that we see every day, but maybe the person who serves you coffee every day. What's one practice we can explore that might support us to remember that all these ordinary things that support us are actually extraordinary?
Oh, it's just amazing, right? So I think this is an endless practice. This is a practice that is endless because I think one question would be, what do you have now that you appreciate that you didn't have 20 years ago? What do you have now that you didn't have 20 years ago? What do you have now available to you that not everyone else has? There's a great quote by a man named Marlon Rico Lee, and he says, be grateful for the things and people you have in your life. Everything you take for granted, someone else is praying for. Everything. And I think about that in the most expansive way, which is, okay, a roof over my head, windows to look outside, something to look outside at. Do I take for granted that I have kids? Do I take for granted that I still have some elders in my life to take care of? Do I take for granted my technology, right? So everything and everyone, I have so many beautiful friends and neighbors and people I'm lucky to have. So it makes us rise to appreciate those things when we stop taking them for granted. That really is gratefulness. It's to see the whole wide swath of what's available to us to appreciate. And I like to ask that question, what do you have now that wasn't available to you 20, 30 years ago? And what might you not have 20 years from now? Because the truth is, I'm losing the mobility of my hands. And so right now I get kind of complainy about, like, I can't open jars and stuff anymore. I have really bad arthritis in my hands and they don't close anymore. But I know it's only going really one direction, truthfully. Like, there's a lot of things I can do and there's some things I can't prevent. So you know what? I'm going to appreciate every little bit that my hands offer me now because they are extraordinary. They're made up of the most incredible number of nerves and my brain says do something and they do them. And so it's like, it's about seeing everything in kind of the grace that it brings to our life, the abilities that we have in our lives. Technology is a huge thing that we have now that we didn't used to have. And, you know, how extraordinary is that? So we forget. It's like, oh, this just becomes routine again, that I can look in a camera and Zoom and talk to you and you're thousands of miles away from me. That is so radical that, like, really, truly 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it would have just blown our socks off so much. It felt like, you know, the Jetsons or some show that was like all about the future. Like,
yeah,
you know, we're going to fly around in cars and yeah, we're going to be able to talk like this. So if you can allow yourself to marvel, I love that word. Are you willing to marvel? And I will just say, we could talk about this forever, but I think there's a vulnerability that comes when we allow ourselves to be so open as to just be appreciative of all the things and people in our life. It's a kind of vulnerability that is so beautiful and it's so real and raw. And we get very self-protective when we come to expect things and we feel entitled. It's like we close ourselves off from that sense of, you know, talk about something you can ask about at the dinner table is, what is mind-blowing to you about what, you know, how did something get here? You know, where did this thing, where was it made? How did it travel here? How many people brought it to our table? How many people were involved in bringing this amazing vegetable or, you know, thing of salt? And where did it come from? And, you know, so just to be willing to be curious again, that everything is kind of surprising. So the ordinary is extraordinary. There really is nothing ordinary. And especially people, there's no ordinary people. So yeah. If you look at everybody as extraordinary, maybe you'll ask different questions, some of those surprising questions, you know?
Yeah, maybe you'll see people a little bit more clearly too.
Absolutely. Like, wow, you're a miracle.
I don't want to make this more narrow because I love that you look at everything in your world this way. That part that you said, and this really struck a chord in my book about, you know, what do you have now that people would be praying they could have? And I think women are very hard on themselves and their bodies. And
so much.
I think just this thought of looking at it that way can really shift how much we appreciate what our bodies can do. Do you have anything to share there?
100% right. Oh my God. I think it's the greatest terrain of this practice because the body is so extraordinary. And boy, do we ever denigrate ourselves and this talk about a gift. I think it's really worth researching and understanding what this body is doing all the time to keep us alive and to keep us here. And I will say that when you just said that, it made me think, I'll just be really vulnerable and honest. It's like, I can look at my breasts and say, geez, you know, I'm 64. They're not quite the perky things they used to be. You know, hopefully it's okay to say that on your show. We're not going to get bleeped out. But, you know, I have two of my closest friends just had double mastectomies for breast cancer that went into both of their breasts. And people all over the place would be praying to be able to have both breasts and to have healthy breasts. Part of what we get hung up on is what we wish was different and what we wish we had more of or less of where flesh is concerned. Or, you know, we're so hard on the containers of our bodies. If we can cultivate the capacity to treat ourselves as these exquisite temples that they are, they hold who we are. They carry us through the world. They give us life. Our body gives us life. Just our lungs themselves, if we were to really understand what our lungs are doing in every single moment to keep us alive, our heart, all of our systems working together in this gorgeous tandem. So I think partly it's about, you know, I'm susceptible to the same things. Can we get out of the mirror and the 10X mirror or the 5X mirror, or the 15X mirror, and stop looking at the little minutiae and our pores and our eyebrows and what we wish was different, more or less, whatever, and step away and really commune with our bodies. I love to put my hands on my heart. I love to connect with my body physically. And I literally will put my hands over my heart, over my chest, and just breathe and meditate and feel my lungs, feel my heart, and reconnect with the miracle of being alive, of what this body is doing just to keep me here. And it helps me get more spacious and gracious and forgiving and easy about the things that don't conform to my ideas of what I think I should look like or what I used to look like. And I'm only getting older, and that's an incredible blessing. I can't believe I get to get older. I think there's all these beautiful ways to shift that, but we also have to support each other, you know, a lot. This is a place where women can do a lot more for one another, and starting with ourselves.
Do you think befriending ourselves is an important component of grateful living?
Totally. Yes. Befriending everything. And I think it's one of the most powerful practices. And I think it's something that women have a particularly difficult time with, which is so ironic because we are such good friends to one another. You know, women are so friend oriented and social, and how much we love the people we love and love them so well and take care of people. And yet we're so not so great at doing that with ourselves. And so I think that befriending practice, whatever that looks like, I always say, befriend, don't begrudge, befriend, don't bemoan. Don't bemoan, don't begrudge, befriend yourself. And it takes just that kind of tenderness that we could extend. And I think, isn't it interesting that I think men are so much less hard on themselves in some ways, and yet we're so good at friending. women are so good at friending. So can we learn something about that towards ourselves? I think it would be a really good way to focus is, boy, what would it look like to really be a good friend to myself today?
Yeah, I can echo that. I mean, in my communities of women, it's just the care and kindness and compassion we're so good at offering to others, we often aren't generous with when it comes to ourselves. So I think that's a practice for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things to do is to stop apologizing. We apologize all the time, you know. It's like, I want to, you know, apologize for anything, but it's like, don't walk into life as an apology. Don't apologize. Don't feel like you need to apologize. Don't feel like you need to be other than you are. And there is inside every apology is kind of a thank you, I think. So somewhere in there is something to appreciate, really. So I don't know. I think it's a really worthwhile practice. And we've got it's a lifetime of practice, but it's such a good question. Thank you for asking.
My pleasure. I know the next principle is appreciation is generative. And at the time you were writing the book, I don't know if you still have this, but you had a post-it note on your desk. And on that post-it note read, "It is amazing how long it takes to complete something you are not working on." What were you calling on yourself to remember with this note?
Oh my gosh, do you still have it? You know, it used to be up here on this cork board, and I've had it in different times. And right now, I don't even know where it is, which is so good, because one of the things I was working on was the book, and I got it done. So, but yeah, I think, you know, appreciation is generative. There's a little saying that goes with every single one of these principles, and that is, when you tend what you value thrives. So with each one of those principles, there's this little saying, and it's an act call to action, which is tend what you value. And where that's grounded is in attention and intention. Like, are you paying attention to the things that you intend to be working on in your life or doing in your life or doing with your life? Are you really giving your attention there? And if we're not tending, then the things that we value are not going to come to fruition. They're not going to flourish. It's really appreciation that allows things to flourish, period. I think the things that we don't appreciate are not going to flourish, and we shouldn't be surprised. If you have a relationship you appreciate and you don't actively tend it, because appreciation is actually an active verb. Like, love is an active verb. So how is it showing up? How is it evident? It should be evident. And so if you have things you appreciate and you tend them, they give back. They grow. They flourish. It's like a self-fulfilling, beautiful way to go through life is to tend what you love, because it'll love you back. And so appreciation is generative, absolutely, in my experience. And it doesn't mean that you appreciate things so that you'll get more. That's a different kind of a thing. But I do believe Lynn Twist, who I used to work for, says, what you appreciate, appreciates. So instead of wanting more, if you appreciate what you have, it's likely to grow in an organic way, in a way that is much more self-sustaining and empowered than just always looking for more. It means that we're actually able to experience sufficiency and enoughness and contentment much more deeply and readily when we appreciate what we already have, when we see the extraordinariness in the ordinary things that we have. Suddenly it's like, wow, why did I think I needed so much more when my life is so full? I can't possibly appreciate all the things that I have now. It's truth. So many of us have so many things that we couldn't actively appreciate if we tried. I like to think about giving away the things that are beyond our capacity to appreciate, that if we can't actively appreciate them, imagine how awesome it would be if we could give them to somebody who could actively appreciate them. So they kind of go in the front of the cupboard versus the back. They're on the bookshelf instead of stored away in boxes.
I loved that thought. I mean, just to jump in, I felt like in your book too, I know this is a topic for another time, a whole different conversation, but you know, sometimes I talk about clearing space in our heads and our homes to let magic in. And I think people get so obsessed with their stuff. And I just happened to be, again, while I was reading this book, I was kind of doing a donation pile situation. when something was a question mark, I was like, you know what? Am I really using and appreciating this, or could someone appreciate it more? And that was a helpful question because it was looking beyond myself when I was making these choices about giving things into the world. So
it's a beautiful way to do it, actually. It feels like it's so much more, it's not charity. It's not like I should give this away. It's not like, oh, I don't deserve this. Or it's really about, am I able to actively appreciate and make use of this thing? Or is there someone else's life who's going to be enriched, who'd be able to really appreciate it more? And what that's done for my family, for us, for my partner and me, is that we actually now give so much more away. We do the buy nothing thing on Facebook. And part of what's interesting is it's like, wow, we have things that we cannot actually pay attention to and take care of, and things that we don't want to attach monetary value to. So we don't want to sell them or tag sale or whatever. It's like, could you use this? And like, we just gave 4 orchids away orchid plants that we have loved, but it's like, they've ended up feeling like clutter. And there's like 15 people who have said, oh my God, I would love these. And then you have joy. The giving is joyful, as opposed to kind of, it feels like a you should kind of a thing.
Yeah. I just really liked that shift of, you know what? I feel like things should be used and appreciated, not to repeat a million times, but it just was a really good feeling to be like, wow, I'd love for this to be appreciated because I'm not using it anymore. Like the cooking utensil that someone got you as a gift that you're never going to actually use. You know, somebody would love that. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm with you. The fifth and final of these principles that I want to make sure we touch on is love is transformative. And you had a lovely quote in the book by Nipun Mehta that says, what gives me hope is that life unfailingly responds to the advances of love. What does that quote mean to you?
Love is hope inspiring. And we really need a lot of hope right now in the world. And my experience of love is that love freely given and love generously given, you know, which is also, again, something that we have to learn to practice. Am I putting strings on my love? Am I expecting something back? Am I inventorying it? Am I really giving what's truly needed? Or am I giving what I need and I wish the other person would need? Or like all of the ways in which we can actually kind of pervert expressions of love and make that their control or their like all these other things. When we're really giving love to people, it is so profound how much of a difference it makes and how much people are changed and impacted as a result of it and how much we are changed as a result of it. And so to me, you know, are we willing to really walk through the world with our hearts wide open? I like to say banging on their hinges, you know, so that we're not hoarding love. We're not keeping love to ourselves and only doling it out when it's not that we're loving ourselves so much. We're keeping, you know, it's like we're holding it like it's this something that we're going to give that somebody has to earn or somebody has to do something just right. And then the love flows. Like what would happen if love flowed so much more generously than that and so much more unconditionally than that? And there's a wonderful woman named Andrea Gibson. She's the poet laureate in Colorado right now. She's dealing with a very intense cancer diagnosis. And she says something like, my goal in life is to die with stretch marks on my heart. And so it's like, can we love a little more? You know, do we dare? And what if we didn't take life for granted and love for granted? And we saw it as something that the more freely we could give love, the more filled up we are, that love is never depleted, that love is actually the more we give away, the more full we are. And so it's really an experiment worth living. And so that quote, it's Nipun Mehta, and life unfailingly responds to the advances of love, is really saying the life force that is most powerful, that's always going to make a difference, is love. And that life will always respond to that love. And if we can keep our hope in that, first, it's really worthwhile to keep our hope in that. And second, it just is a great way to walk through life. And it gives back so much more than it asks of us, actually, to have faith in love and to be the embodiments of love.
Yeah. Can we be vulnerable enough to love more? This actually takes me to when we think of like loving deeply, again, oftentimes we think about our people closest to us, but there's different points in the book where you talk about the significance of even overappreciating people in small daily interactions. And I think about this. My mother, I will say one thing she always did, I could tell just as a child, I could sense checking out from the grocery store, she'd make people feel special and smile or ask them how their day was and actually drop into a moment of connection in just small daily transactions. And I didn't realize that it was a lesson I learned.
That's a beautiful lesson. How lucky you are to have had that modeling, and what a wonderful person to raise you. You know, that's extraordinary. It really is extraordinary. And that's really special. And it takes so little to make someone's day. It takes so little to make someone's day. And if we think about how easily our day can be made, you know, by someone saying one kind thing to us, I love to say, and I say in the book, one of the kindest things we can say to people is take your time. And so when someone's, you know, serving you on the phone as a customer service person or serving you food and you're at a restaurant or serving you in line somewhere and you say, just take your time. Oh my God, you can watch the person in front of you just absolutely drop their shoulders. And who says take your time? Almost nobody, because we don't feel like we can take our time in the world. So it changes everything. Suddenly, maybe we can feel a little more spacious about time. And it actually helps me when I say that, because it's like, oh, I can be more relaxed than I am. If I tell somebody else to take my time who's waiting on me, it puts me in the position of also saying, I'm willing to take my time. And that's a beautiful lesson to learn as well. So I think love really is this, it's medicine. It's really medicine, and it's medicine that we can dole out. There's so many ills that are healed by being loving. And right now, our country we're suffering so many ills in this country of separation and judgment and othering and assumptions and stereotypes and like all the stuff that we deal with. And I think to be a bit more loving is just great medicine for the times that we're in, really.
Yeah. I know we're coming up on time, but I want to share a simple practice that I've been exploring from your book since reading it, because I think it's really easy to fall into patterns of using kind of obligated language when we go about our day to day. And I'll give some examples. You know, I have to make dinner right now. I have to pick my kids up from school. And you encouraged us to cross out "I have to" in how we talk about our day to day and substitute "I get to." Why is this such a powerful practice?
It is the most powerful practice. Everywhere I go, when I teach and I talk, people just, it rocks their worlds, because I think it shifts it to a sense of privilege. It actually is truthful, because the truth is, in our caretaking, and as I said, I'm doing a lot of caretaking, but it's a privilege to get to care for the people we love because they're here. And I think it's that real thing again of what Marlon Rico Lee says is, be grateful for the things and people in your life. Someone somewhere is praying for what you're taking for granted. It's so easy to forget that, but it's like, you know, I will often say, like, I have to go grocery shopping. And the truth is, I get to go grocery shopping. There are so many people in the world who can't get in a car and have the money and go to a wonderful grocery store near me and, you know, buy the beautiful food and produce that I can buy and come home. And then I get to make dinner. I'm the cook in my family. And it helps me remember, actually, Whitney, that I actually love to cook. I can feel so done unto by life and like my responsibilities that it's like, oh, I have to cook again. But the truth is, you know, I love to be able to have the ability to cook. And there are a lot of people who would love to cook. And I think the thing to do is, again, is to say, what are the things that I can do now that I couldn't do, that I imagined my dream come true when I was a teenager? I imagined that my dream come true as an adult would be to have my own car, you know, that I could get in my own car and drive myself somewhere and go buy beautiful things and come home and make a beautiful meal and have a roof over my head that I love and a home and a partner. And like all these things that I used to think would have been dreams come true, I forgot. that they're really my dreams come true. So there's something about I get to that does so many powerful things at one time. It reminds us that a lot of other people can't. It reminds us that we can do it right now and we won't always be able to. It reminds us that we haven't always been able to. It reminds us that it's a privilege and that a lot of these things that we actually feel burdened by, when we shift the energy and do it with love and remember that we're getting to do something, it changes everything about how those responsibilities are delivered in our lives, like how we then extend ourselves to the people in our lives and toward the things that make up our life that are our responsibilities. And really, every responsibility has so much privilege in it.
Yeah. Just drops us into a totally different perspective. I mean, I got a call from the school nurse because I'd taken my daughter to get her eyes checked and they dilated it. And I had already taken out, I was like, I think you're okay. You know, she was feeling a little bit weird, but I was like, okay, yeah. We just got our eye exam. My gut was like, I think we can go back to school. We're going to be all right, you know? And then I went back to pick her up and I was, again, it was just like, I was reading this book and I'd already gone to a meeting and I was like, okay, this isn't convenient, but I'm so grateful that I have the flexibility that I can do this. And I get to go get her. I get to be a mom. And yeah. I dreamed of that and signed up for that. And it's a pattern interrupt. It's really a pattern interrupt.
It's a pattern interrupter. It's an intervention. I like to call it as like, boom, these perspective prompts are real interventions. I think they're very powerful. So I love that you use that. And I hope other people who are listening try it as well, because it's a game changer.
It's powerful. So the first line of your book will stop a lot of people in their tracks because it said, not dying changed everything. I know we've covered a lot of territory. Is there any lesson from your book or even recent experiences on your heart or from, you know, your brush with death that we haven't talked about that you just feel like you'd really like to leave the women listening with?
I think I would say I've lost a lot of people in my life who I've loved, who I love a lot. My mom died while I was writing the book, and I have a couple of really close friends, three really close friends who've died of cancer, and a lot who are also dealing with cancer, and I dealt with cancer. And so it's really important that we not take life for granted, that the lives that we have are gifts, and that every day is really a kind of this miraculous opportunity that we're given to be alive. And it changes everything when we treat life that way. And I always think, and this is really a perspective prompt for me, is the people I have loved and lost would give anything for my harder days and the days that I begrudge and the days that I complain and the body I judge. And, you know, the people who are no longer here, who I've loved, would just give anything for the life I have and just for a day, just for one day. And when I was facing death, I just could never imagine that I would still be here now. So it's so easy to forget. And so I try to remember. And gratefulness is remembering in all our moments what a privilege it is really to be here and to live our lives like they matter, because they do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your book was chock full of gorgeous reflections. I like to give women something that they can journal on or reflect on, or maybe just have a deeper conversation with another human about. So I always invite guests to share a question at the end. So in the areas of grateful living and the practice of not taking anything for granted, especially our own life and those of the ones we love, what's one question women could be asking themselves more?
I think it's really worth asking ourselves, and this is a practice for all of us all the time, is if I could show up more fully right now, what would that look like? If I could show up more gratefully right now, what would that look like? If I could show up more honestly, more lovingly, like just what would it look like to be willing to be more vulnerable? And, you know, we walk around feeling so vulnerable so much of the time. But I think there's lots of ways in which we don't share it and we don't show it. And so I think those risks are really worth it. And they bring so much more to life in our lives and deepen so many connections when we take those risks with one another. So I think especially woman to woman, if I were to show up more honestly and more fully right now and more gratefully, what would that look like?
Absolutely. I know that I was moved by our conversation. I know so many of my listeners will want to follow you and support your beautiful mission. So where's the best place to learn more and support you, Christy?
Thank you so much. You're just amazing, Whitney, really. I'm at christinelson.net, K-R-I-S-T-I-N-E-L-S-O-N. And it's my website. And I teach and I do workshops some. And I'm really bad at social media, but I have a website and I have a book, which is kind of a miracle in and of itself. So Wake Up Grateful is a really beautiful way to start. And there's some other books I've kind of co-edited and co-authored, and people can write to me. I mean, I love when people write to me through my website. So you can find me there, and please don't be shy.
Thank you. We'll be sure to capture that all in the show notes as well, so people can reference it. Christy, it's been a true pleasure. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Whitney. This has been really beautiful. I appreciate what you do.
I'm so glad you joined me today. If you're looking for more, feel free to connect with me on Instagram at @WhitneyWoman. And if you enjoyed the show, I invite you to support me by leaving a review or sharing it with a friend. Hope you have an inspired day.